Gather around your speakers, hoop heads. It's NBA story time. Jamel Johnson here to spin you tales of NBA shenanigans you didn't know you needed to know. Like that time when a little startup league tried anything to be relevant, or when Ricky Davis earned himself a dumb nickname. I also love you, Ricky Davis. Catch a new tale on NBA Storytime every week, then listen to the postgame where I break it down with comedians, ballers, and what have you. Find NBA Storytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Wash Up Walk-Ons fans, welcome in to potentially one of the more diverse episodes that we've done. We talk about a whole range of different stuff on this. Start off with a little golf, PGA Championship, Phil Mickelson. Can he pull it out? When you guys are listening to this, we'll know the answer to that question. Peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, football versus baseball, lifting, all kinds of stuff. Let's have a day. Let's go.
Welcome back, Washed Up Walk-Ons fans, episode 217 of the podcast. Today's really a tremendous morning because we have our buddy Kevin back. We've missed him dearly. We've been having to record these podcasts at times where he's doing things that normal people would call success. We would call him sandbagging us, his friends who actually matter. But today he's not doing that. He's with us early ass morning. And Kluver, again, found a way to show up without sleeves on. I live in the desert, have for like 800, maybe 900 days now at this point, and somehow I still find a way to show up with sleeves on every time. My closet's still full of them, but this guy has to show off his guns every chance he gets, and he even cut the sleeves off our own merchandise just so he could show his shoulders. So the guy is really trying to sell his fitness program, and that's all the shitting I have to do on him for now. I'll turn it over to him.
What, Kluv, before we get into this,
yeah.
What is the proportion of sleeveless shirts to non-sleeveless shirts in your wardrobe right now? Because I would say just by podcast appearances, it's like 70-30 sleeveless.
It's like 90-10. That's a great question, Kevin. And as Drake mentioned, I am happy that you're back. Like, you jump on, you're in the office, which, by the way, your backdrop, and you've got the little barbell over there and your reward and some of the stuff. I mean, it looks fantastic. It's so much better than Drake and I's backdrop. And it just makes me happy.
I get made fun of it for it. When I'm on like these work calls, they say, oh, the CEO is on now.
I mean, hey, so we're not the only ones. I'm glad this is it's a community deal. So I told Drake, Drake's spoiled. Drake lives in the desert, and that's true. We were out there in whatever, March, and it's, and granted, it was, the weather wasn't great when we were there, but it was like 75 degrees. All right.
No, but honestly, nobody gets screwed on weather worse than my visitors, because my mom, she doesn't get good weather except during the absolute months where you can't get bad weather. But like when she comes down in the winter, usually if she's here for 10 days, it's like she gets 3 days of sun, which is just absolutely absurd.
Yeah. So when, you know, you live in that environment, you are now spoiled by the vitamin D and the rays. And so you get used to it, and you just kind of fall back into like, oh, I'll just wear sweatshirts, especially because you keep that air conditioning nice and flowing on the inside. Because if you don't, y'all will literally die because it gets that hot. I think it's already touching like 100 there, right, on the hot days.
And it's easily. It's been 100 here for a while.
And it's May. So in Iowa, we roll out of winter and we've all been hibernating like bears. I start to get a little frisky with the wear, right? And I don't get to go outside because I sit at this goddamn desk all day and just program workouts and watch Twitch. I mean, my life is...
You're trying to get vitamin D through your computer screen on your biceps?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. I keep the window shade open and just try and soak in as much as I can. Honestly, I wear less than this during the day.
But Kluvert, is there anyone making you sit at your desk when you're doing this? Is there anything preventing you from going outside and sitting on your laptop?
My laptop actually did break. I don't have a laptop. Granted, I could do it on my... We bought an iPad. I could do it on the iPad. But, you know, it's just... I have more of my shit up here. There's no excuses. I just like wearing cutoffs. The ratio, to answer your question, Kevin, is honestly probably not as crazy as you'd think. I would say I have a bunch of t-shirts that I don't wear on the podcast. You guys see very limited... I would say 1 in 4 of my t-shirts are cut off.
So this kid picks from the 25% of his wardrobe.
Every time.
Every time he's going to be on camera.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That alone, Kluver, I haven't wanted to beat you up in a while. Today I want to beat you up.
Okay. Well, it's a good thing you're out in the desert then. Lefty. Lefty's had a good 3 days. And I love Phil Mickelson. I think I don't know a soul on earth that doesn't like Phil Mickelson. He's just one of those guys. What are your guys' thoughts on the weekend so far? And can he pull it out today?
Okay, I would love to see Phil pull this off.
I don't think he hangs on. I
absolutely love it.
I think he can hold on, dude. He's swinging the club well enough that he's not – he is hitting the ball 320. If there's anybody that can actually play with Brooks Koepka when Brooks is on his game, it has to be somebody who's hitting it as far as him. Phil is actually hitting the ball as far as Brooks Koepka is within 10 or 15 yards, and he's playing his wedges unbelievable. So
honestly, wedge game's always been his strong.
Wedge game is fire.
But did you see some of the shots he's been pulling off, like that 115-yard from the left bunker over the tree? He hit it to like 2 feet when it spun backwards.
Stupid.
Like, that's a shot that nobody can hit. Like, you could put God in front of that golf ball, and he can't make that golf ball do that.
But by the way, we met God right as we started this podcast.
So as long as Phil's putter is on, Phil can win this tournament. If Phil putts well on Sunday, he can win the tournament.
When was Phil's last major?
9 years ago.
Yeah, it's been a hot minute.
Dude, he's 50 years old, man. Playing at the top of the world.
You got to think, like, is this the last hurrah? Is this it for the old dog?
Well, you would have assumed it would have been, except for the fact that he's found more distance than he did when he was technically in the prime of his career. Like, Phil didn't hit it consistently 320 with the driver ever. And every time he's hitting it out there in the middle of the fairway, 320. And, I mean, the guy has found the fountain of youth, honestly.
Hey, Steve Stricker.
I don't know what it is, but just like on social media, too. It seems like he's having more fun with the game.
He is. And this makes this actually,
if you think about it, he has way less pressure on him than he used to. He's 50 years old now, and he's not like he was competing with Tiger to be the player of the generation. And he was always a step behind.
It was always Tiger 1, Phil 2.
And he was always having to chase that. And I'm sure that truly aggravated somebody when you're one of the best in the entire world, but you're still second rate compared to this guy who you've been competing against forever. But now Phil's just like an old man. He's found, like I said, the fountain of youth in his swing. And it's just like, screw it, man. I don't have pressure anymore. I love golf. And this is just an amazing opportunity. Like, when you swing free, you play better.
A lot comes to mind here. And as you just mentioned, it was always Tiger, Phil, 1-2. Take a guess at Phil's lifetime earnings.
$35 million, $50 million.
I was going to say around $50 million.
$92 million.
Jesus.
Is that just from PGA golf, or is that sponsors included and everything?
It says for Mickelson, one of the most popular, accomplished, and wealthy pro golfers in history, a win would put him at over $94 million in career earnings. Mickelson ranks second on the tour's career money leader list with $92.4 million earned prior to this week's PGA. Woods leads with at the list with 120.8.
And see, I actually would have guessed Tigers is higher.
I would have too.
I thought Tigers would be higher too. Yeah.
But that's, again, I thought
Tiger by a fucking mile. I mean, yeah.
That's just purse winnings though. Mm-hmm. Like when you think, I mean, Tiger's probably closer to a half billion.
Endorsements are at least times three is earnings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
He had a fucking Gatorade named after him.
Right. So.
And he was within the top two or three ranked athletes in the world for like a 10 consecutive year span. It was the top boxer in the world, Tiger Woods, LeBron. And the top soccer player in the world, pretty much.
He's got to be, he's in between a half and a bill for sure, if not eclipsed a billion. For those big time guys, the endorsements, they're always bigger than the game money no longer matters. Like the salary doesn't matter anymore.
I mean, just think about how stupid this is actually. Name another sport where an athlete has a Gatorade named after him, a video game named after him, and Nike has their own line of clothes after him.
Honestly, the closest you could get would be like skateboarding. It'd be like Tony Hawk.
Tony Hawk. Yeah.
Here was going to be my answer until you said video game was Michael Phelps. Mm-hmm. With Speedo, and
they should come out with a little swimming 2021.
Oh, I would buy a console just to play the game.
That'd be incredible. I don't know how you would do well though. Like, what would you? That's probably why they haven't come out with one.
Actually, named the video game Tiger Woods PGA Tour. Like, it's his tour. Yeah. Everyone else is just playing with
him. Yeah, it's his world. Everyone's living in it. So, this brings up the question: is golf? When is the prime of golf then? It's way later than most sports because clearly reps matter.
The prime of golf.
I won't say your prime is later. I mean, you think about in the last 10 years, some of these young guys have really started.
That's true.
To dominate.
Yeah.
So I Speed, say Rory. Prime is later. You just play a lot later than other sports.
So is the prime just extended then? Because
your prime can be extended as long as your mental toughness, because like if a guy finds, like we see with Jordan Spieth, like, he won stupid early and he was like the prodigy child. Yep. But then he went through a swing change, went through a huge lull, and like is trying to find his game back.
I mean, he's still one of the best in the world.
Exactly, exactly. And he has the potential to be in his prime still in the future as long as he's right in his mind. That's kind of my point, is like, that's why we saw Tiger last as long as he did until his body completely fell apart on him.
Yeah.
Because he was the most mentally tough. And like in golf, if you got the right swing coach and you got the right mindset, you can play great golf forever.
Mm-hmm. It's just one of those things where like there's no limiting factor other than, or I guess the only limiting factor is being functional in your joints and making like, that's basically it, right? Like tennis,
I mean, your cardio starts. Even if you don't hit it a mile anymore, like I remember last year I played with this guy's probably mid 60s. Mm-hmm. And he shot even par on the round. He didn't hit it more than 220 yards off the tee.
Yeah. It's the old Zach Johnson strategy.
Yeah.
Who he hit a 10 this weekend. Good for him.
Even worse than that, a guy by the name of Cameron Tringali, he was in second place, 3 under, heading into like 13 on the back nine. And he ended up 13 over on his last 5 holes to shoot himself completely out of the tournament from second place.
He went from making a shit ton of money to zero.
God, that sucks so bad. Well, I mean, you're right though. Back to, he really has been like this social media Phil is what I'm talking about. Like his social media game is pretty fire. And when you've made $92 million and you're 50 years old, like you just, no one expects anything of you. And so he can go out and just play free golf. Now, yesterday on the back nine, he had a rough 2-hole span there. He went bogey, double bogey. And you could tell he's like, he's starting to tense up a little bit. He's starting to get a little tight, you know?
The thing about it is too, is that it was only 1.5 real bad swings.
Yeah.
Like his drive on the second hole, I think it was 12 or 13, whichever one it was, mm-hmm. was a horrible shot. But then his next drive was great. The iron shot was like world class.
Yeah.
And then he backs it up on the next hole and hits a great tee shot. So, I mean, the guy was playing well. He choked one real shot.
Yeah. It's just interesting to me because then you see he's not the only one. Steve Stricker is still playing, and he's 54.
And Stuart it's like, Sink is still playing too. Stuart Sink's son's on the bag too. I think that's the coolest thing ever. That's
so great. Like,
Kluver, you seem like you're watching a lot more golf. Have you been playing at all?
I have this sheet of topics that I want to get to today, and one of them is just golf in general. Like, I need to – in a month, I have to go – not that I'm expected to do well or anything, but I have to go and do that, or I get to go and do the Polk County I Club golf outing. So yeah, man, I think the wife and I are probably going to go try and get a few rounds in here at the local Sugar Creek in Waukee.
What's even better for a bad new player than playing rounds is hitting on the range because there's no pressure and you just get to learn how to feel comfortable swinging a golf club.
I'll be honest. For a guy that golfs 3 to 5 rounds a summer, maybe now, the biggest thing for me that has helped me get a consistent swing is Topgolf. I've gone to Topgolf a couple times, and like more than what most people go and they just try and have fun or hit it as far as they can. I actually use it as like, okay, I don't get a lot of experience with a club in my hand. So I'm going to try and just make consistent contact with the ball here. And it's actually helped me out. Now, I can't.
I'm hoping we get one of those over in Eastern Iowa.
Oh, it'd be incredible if we could get one. I think it would kill in Des Moines. I really do. I think.
I can't believe there isn't one in the Quad Cities. I mean, Bettendorf has a super multi-million dollar sports outdoor
that
facility.
That place is sick.
That, insane. And they don't have a Topgolf?
Yeah, it would fit right out there. I mean, it'd be insane. Omaha is the closest one to me, at least, and they just built one. So, I think at one point, old PDP car was gonna like try and open one. Like,
I think it's like, oh man, it's like actually a stupid investment. How not stupid as in it doesn't
stupid cost, big? You mean
how much it costs to make one of those things? It's like I forget the number. I want to say it was like north of $50 million to make one.
Jesus Christ, that's insane. That's going to take a little bit to get back in the green there. but they dude, make, they
every
bring
time
in.
I've been to one, been packed.
Packed. It's like, never.
It's a great time. People love it.
Yeah.
From what I heard, the year 2020 was tough on Topgolf.
It probably was. But
naturally. It was tough on pretty much every business out there.
Still an impeccable idea, though. Like, once you get it going, you just, I mean, there's not even a lot of upkeep, right? Like, and you just get crappy balls that have little trackers in them. You get clubs that are and you just, you know, most people bring their own clubs. I mean, it's like, you know, so yeah, no, I got to get out on the course and start swinging a little bit so I don't look like a complete asshole in front of the old Polk County.
I was completely wrong. It was around $20 million for a time.
Oh, that, yes. Okay. We're good. We could probably open one then.
Yeah. Eastern Iowa, just because I want one.
We have to first open up the Benton Boys Steakhouse under mostly Ike and Josie's money first, and then us three are the bus boys. And then when that makes a crap load of money, then we use that as the initial investment capital for the Topgolf that we open up. So
you can lowball yourself on that all you want, but I'm going to put in as much money as Josie and Ike will allow me to, and then I'm also going to play host at the restaurant, so you can busboy your little imp ass out of here. I'm going to be making some cash.
I'll 10 bar. I'm not gonna be a busboy, but I'll 10 bar.
That would be, dude, I was just gonna say Drake would be a fantastic host. Like, I would love to see no, but that's why he would be a fantastic host. And then you would be an awesome bartender, Kev. And the only thing that comes to mind is Dennis being.
Yeah, I was just about to say, I'm just imagining us as the Always Sunny characters. Yeah. Drake is, I'm Dennis, you're Charlie.
Yep, I'll be Charlie. And only people who watch that show get it, but that's a really great reference. All right, here's a hypothetical. You get, and this was brought up because there's an actual kid in the situation that I know, not going to name names. You get offered a MLB contract out of high school. You're talking with the team. You're great at baseball. You're a pitcher. They're like, hey, we're going to draft you first or second round here, and we're going to give you a shitload of money, but you're also an elite football player. And you like football more, but you're going to sign for $1 million or more in baseball. What do you do?
How good are you at football?
You're also elite at football. You're
elite. How good is elite though? Because first or second round in the MLB draft, like you have 30 some rounds.
You're going to see the field on special teams within the first couple of years for sure. You're an eventual starter.
So you have to play. Play baseball. If you have to play special teams in football, or you can be a first or second round pick in the MLB draft, baseball.
So for you, losers
who play special teams.
So for you, Drake, it's
because you're telling me this kid isn't a automatic starter.
He's not an automatic.
He is not even a quarterback.
He's not a starter day one, but maybe
a quarterback.
But maybe in year two,
is he a quarterback?
No.
Then it's a no brainer. If pitcher, you're not a quarterback and you can go be a pitcher in the MLB and potentially make pitcher money. Yeah. And you don't have to take any of the hits. It's not even a question.
But how many guys get drafted, then go and everybody goes and plays AAA. How many guys actually make it?
Well, if you're a really good pitcher, you can definitely make it.
Yeah, if you're a really good pitcher, you'll make it too.
You got a lot better chance of making it if you're a really good pitcher at a AAA when you're already on the team than as a football player who may have to play special teams. That's how non-actual.
Can we stop the hate on the special teams?
I was a special teams player too. We understand. We didn't have the opportunity to be a first round MLB draft pick, and we know exactly where on the totem pole you rank if all you are is a special teams player when you're young. If you're fucking elite and you can go do something that Kyler Murray can do, then sure, take.
We're hung up on the special teams. I was saying you're guaranteed gonna be a four phase special teamer immediately. You're probably starting year two, and you are in line to be the star eventual draft pick from the team. That's who you
are. That's assuming a lot,
but you're also assuming a lot coming out of high school.
Not at all. Cause he's already gotten drafted.
No, because you said, there's $1 million right there on the table.
That's what I'm saying. You're right.
You just lost this argument three times in a row.
I was just curious. It's not an argument. I'm saying what amount of money do they have to throw at you to take it?
Well, all you're thinking about is his signing bonus right there. It's not like however many years he signs for on that MLB contract, he's going to certainly have more than $1 million coming. That's just $1 million guaranteed as a signing bonus, which even sounds like a little bit of a low ball if you're a first or second round pick. But
yeah, I don't know.
He's literally guaranteed. If they're drafting him, that is guaranteed. And if he has to play 4 years of college football, take that as
an
unguaranteeable situation.
You're baseball 100%, not even a conversation.
It's not a conversation if you're that high of a draft pick.
But what if you just in this situation, though, you also prefer football? You like football a lot more. You just happen to be an elite pitcher.
That's great. Then you better be in a financial situation that you're able to turn down a potential $5 million in your life, you know?
Why don't you go to college and do both?
Sure.
Can you get drafted and then you just hang out and play football?
You get drafted and you can just decline it and just go to college.
Yep.
But then you don't get the money.
Correct.
Obviously. Right.
If you get drafted, did they still have rights to you when they?
Only for a year, I think.
Okay.
And then your
mic's fucking up.
Baseball's you can get drafted again after your junior season and then after your senior season.
Okay. All right. Yeah, unplug your mic quick, Kev. All right, well, that was – in this situation, kids going to college. So, yeah.
Play football?
I believe, football.
Is this person going to an elite institution that pumps out NFL draft picks?
I would say average.
Is this person going to Iowa?
No.
So, Kluver, now you just told me that this player was unreal elite at football.
Yeah.
Unreal elite football players don't go.
Okay. He's not unreal elite on a national level.
You've made this even easier of a pick by talking yourself backwards by the end of it.
Not a high school American
player? He might be with one of the – I'm not sure.
He's, I mean, there's like five All-American like games out there now. So like,
yeah,
if you're not in one of them, I'm with Drake. You're probably.
I think he might have been selected to one of those games. So he's not a top. He's not a top 25 guy in the nation, but he's maybe a top 500 guy in the nation.
Well, he just theoretically got drafted as a top 8 in his position in the entire country. So, yeah. I mean, that's already drafted. So that's my decision.
Grown ass dudes in college in the equation too.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, unless you just really love football that much more than baseball, take the money.
Well, I mean, we're talking to Kevin Ward. Kevin, roll me to the bank in my wheelbarrows of cash, Ward. I mean, look, he's got a fucking built-in in his office. It's just he's the CEO. It's who he is, baby. Guys are home training. I'm over
drinking from my Shake Shack or my witch.
Drinking from his witch cup. Yep, those cups. Hey, those cups are elite, man. They're even more elite when they're carrying 32 ounces of Oreo milkshake. Yum, 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 yum. Walk on fans, I got to do it to you one more time. Just bear with me here. I'm the Mr. Fit guy. I want to help you get healthy. I want to help you lose weight. I want to help you. All right? Losing weight is not easy. There's 70% of Americans who are overweight, and there's a reason for that. And I could explain it to you in detail if we wanted to get into it, but just know that you're not alone. If you're feeling a little bit overweight, a little sluggish, a little out of shape, not what you used to be, I want to help you get back to that. All right? And there's a really easy first step to doing that. It's just behavioral change. I created a 30-day challenge called the 30-Day Fast Fit Challenge. You can go to tylerkluver.com right now, see it, or you can DM me, just message me. I'll talk to you all about it. It's the easiest 30 days you'll ever do. It's a couple behavior switches, a little eating schedule that you put.
General managers ask questions to find the right players, like, do they have ice in their veins? When you're hiring, you can use Indeed assessments to make sure you find the right candidates with the skills you need. Don't just hope your perfect candidate will find you. Indeed's hiring tools help you cut through the noise to hire faster and smarter. In fact, Indeed Instant Match provides a list of quality candidates whose resumes are on Indeed the moment you post a sponsored job. And with Indeed assessments, choose from 135 skills tests to help make sure you're finding applications from people with skills you need. Get started right now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Get a $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through September 30th. Terms and conditions apply.
Put together, you don't even have to cut out foods. It's $100, and it could be literally the best $100 you ever spend. It could literally be the first steps in a long journey to you getting back your health and fitness, changing around your biomarkers, your lipids, your cholesterol, your blood pressure. I've had so many people have success on this challenge, and I want you to as well if you want to take advantage of the opportunity. All right, just hit me up. The challenge starts on May 31st in 1 week from today. It's going to be the June challenge, and it's going to be an incredible 30 days of progress and success for those who buy into it. All right, let's go make some gains together. Now back to the show. Guys are home training right now. Dude's got a 4-week break, the biggest spring to summer break an Iowa football player has probably ever seen. When you guys went home and trained during those times, I'm curious, how closely did you follow the card that we were given? Did you do more weight because it was always very light? Did you do the exact same amount of conditioning reps, or how did you guys approach those 3 weeks?
I usually just did the card. Sometimes I would do some more conditioning because the conditioning was like really light.
Yeah.
I knew that we were about to get put through the gauntlet of summer conditioning. So I'd sometimes run more, but as far as lifting, I pretty much just stick to the card.
I did the exact opposite of Kevin. I lifted heavy ass weights, ignored the card, and very rarely conditioned myself.
I was curious. So
I hated conditioning. Dude, I was fat and my joints hurt. I hated running. And if Doyle wasn't there to make me do it, I'll just lift some weights.
I would also sometimes do some like GPP style stuff because you come back and you do GPP for 2 weeks. But like flip tires and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I always thought that the conditioning was a little bit closer. It was very, I always thought it was interesting how low level they gave us over break. It's like, then we have guys come in after a 3 or 4 week period and they're dragging ass. It's like, well, yeah, because the card we just had was like 3x3 hang clean for at 128 pounds. And you made us run 655s. Like, it's because we didn't do anything.
So our break was only 2 weeks. So like you're going to keep your conditioning for 2 weeks. You just got to do literally something.
Yeah.
And they wanted to make it so that guys would actually do it too.
That's true. Clearly that didn't work for Drake. I would do the card exactly, the lifts exactly. I would up the weight on the lifts so that they were actually closer to like maybe in the 70% range, 60 to 70% range instead of like 50%. And then I would run the conditioning reps exactly as is on the card. And then I would usually throw in an extra like CrossFit Metcon that was 10 to 20 minutes long to add some conditioning into it. GPP stuff. So I don't know. What did you guys... This is another interesting...
Is Zach doing it right now?
Yeah, Zach's been coming over and...
Look a lot like what we used to have.
Yeah, it's the same shit. I think they have 3 weeks worth of stuff. Conditioning days were... One day was 55s, one day was cut 85s, one day was 60s. And it was like 6, 8, 10 reps of each, I think, as it went down the week.
Dude, if you ever thought I was doing 10 cut 85s at home by myself instead of just doing two extra sets of squat and calling it a day, you're out of your mind.
It might have been on the cut 85s, it might have been 8 for the big week. It might have gone like 6, 7, 8 or 4, 6, 8 or something like that.
They also gave us cross fields when we were home too.
Yeah.
Which we never did at Iowa.
And those I actually ran.
I remember doing cross fields one time. In 2015, it was the first time I had come home and my family had moved to Ankeny because I remember doing it on the Ankeny practice field. I couldn't complete it. I must have done it wrong because I was getting to be in pretty good shape by that third year. Like I could hang and I wasn't missing reps anymore. Could not complete the cross fields. Like I couldn't do it. I don't know what was wrong with me. So
yeah. I do gotta say is like when you go home and you go from a high energy environment like the weight room at Iowa,
it's true,
to lifting alone at like your high school or whatever, it's kind of a shock to the system. Luckily, I had my brother for 4 of my years to work out with, but
yeah,
that I always remember sucked. But you know, dude, that's what you have to do after college anyway. So get used to it, I guess.
Yeah, Kev, is there any way you can pull your mic closer to you? Not all the way close to you, just all the way to the edge of your.
That actually does sound better.
Just yeah, there you go.
Our gym floor at our high school was like a rubber. You know, you put down a bunch of rubber mats together.
Yeah. Yep.
And so we had soft shoes and a rubber floor, and trying to squat with that after coming from Iowa where you had those platform shoes and a hard, like firm resistant floor, felt terrible.
Dude, it's all about force, dude. You're literally letting energy leak into the ground. Like you can't do as much weight. It's just not as.
And my aired up shoes were also absorbing the energy.
Right. Yeah. No, if you want to squat a PR, you definitely want to be on a platform with Romalios on. Those things
I always love the you got the raised heel just a little bit too. It made a world of difference.
Oh yeah, love those things. I would get myself a pair, but they're $180 and I don't care that much. It took me till year 3 to feel good about pushing myself in conditioning in the summer. As you guys know, you can't really hide in front of your teammates. Your teammates see everything. You guys watch me struggle. Me and Manders pull the fucking
Manders.
We were pulling the caboose, man. For us, for a couple years.
2014 summer of Manders is the most suffering I think I've ever seen an individual take.
And he went through it, man. He went through it.
I mean, and dude was halfway done with the rep at the end of the time allotted for the rep.
Oh, God.
And he just kept going, man. He just kept going.
And they felt bad for him. They didn't even call him out. It was just like,
I mean, what can you do at that point? Like, you're obviously just nowhere close.
Yeah.
It's really not an effort thing at that point. It's just he physically can't do it.
Right. And I was making times, but mentally in my head, I think I felt like Manders until 2016, until we went undefeated. And then that following year, I finally felt like I had a grasp so much on the strength and conditioning side of things. Like, I knew the flow of certain workouts. I knew where to put the energy here, where to, you know, where, how do I get through this most efficiently? And I could finally push and try and compete. Were you guys on that level right away, or did it take you a little bit to get there? Because my high school conditioning just was, it took me 2-3 years to get there. You guys were both much further along. When did it feel like you could actually like finally go out and like you weren't worried about not missing a rep, but you know, kind of.
I understand what you're saying. If it wasn't hot as bejesus out, I would say 2015. So like I was a year ahead of you.
Okay.
Where I was like going out and trying to like win reps and stuff.
Right.
But I was still with the skill at that time. So I wasn't winning a whole lot of reps out there, except for cut 85s. I was good at cut 85s.
Couple hits.
And then once I moved to linebacker, I was like pissed if I wasn't winning reps.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, when I came.
I think that summer, the only other like upperclassman semi in my group was Ben. So it was just like, it was just me and Ben going at it.
Yeah.
When I came in, I was fresh off of track. I was 200 pounds. I was reasonably ripped and I was running with the semis. So I was pretty confident I was never going to miss a rep. And even though I was really close to missing a rep later in my career, when I was fat, sloppy, busted ass leg out of shape, I still made it through the career with no missed reps. So I felt good about that. No missed reps and no penalties in a game.
Wow. That's 100% something to be proud of. That's incredible.
And I was still one of the 30 percentile tier shitters on the squad, but no missed reps and no penalties. So eat my nuts.
Did you ever miss body weight either?
Miss body weight?
Oh, I miss body weight. Come on. Dude, in camp, I was like 12 pounds under at times.
Really?
Yeah.
Camp doesn't count. They don't care about camp.
Oh, I still probably missed 2 or 3 body weights ever in my career.
Yeah, I missed 2. I accidentally missed 2. There's no reason I should have.
Yeah, I for sure did.
You have one of those days where you're like, oh yeah, I've made body weight 12 weeks in a row. I just do what I always do. I'm a little under. I'll drink a Powerade after and you know, your body weight's 216. You got to get to 213.6 to be considered 214. And you roll in and you're like, son of a bitch, I sweat too much during the warmup. I'm 213.3. Son of a bitch, I just missed weight. I'm coming in for breakfast tomorrow. My whole life sucks. Fuck.
Yeah, that's literally is how it goes, though. Sometimes, like, you weigh yourself the night before. Okay, I'm good. And then you, like, lose 6 pounds overnight, and it's just like, God damn it.
So shitty.
Yeah.
Do you think that the way they handle body weights, how would you improve the way they handle body weights? Was it – not that it was too strict or it wasn't strict enough, but with, like, do you think the window's enough?
I think, like – because your weight fluctuates so much throughout the day.
Yeah.
I don't know. If there was like, I don't know. I think it'd be better if there was, I don't know if this is even like a reasonable way to try to do it, but if you could like, say like, if we're weighing in this day, like weigh-ins are always at like this time.
Yeah.
So you have like a constant time to like weigh in at, you know?
I feel like maybe once too often, they did things in a way that was like, hey, we're trying to get you. Maybe.
Yeah. And it can sometimes feel like that, but at the same time, it's a way to just keep you honest. And like, you know, like there's guys who weigh in on Monday and then, you know, the overweight guys eat their ass out the rest of the week. And then the underweight guys like drop 10 pounds by the next day. And they're so like, they want to see that. Okay. It's not like we're trying to catch you. It's like, we want to see like, okay, who's actually not where they're supposed to be. You know?
Yeah. No, it definitely grabs the people who are really scheming the system. But for those like, you know, me or you who are pretty close, but like you might be a pound or two off late in the week. And then you eventually get back. You're like, yeah, that's kind of annoying that we had to weigh in. I don't know. I just
and I think maybe a better way they could have done it, and I don't know, maybe they did do this with guys who were body weight problems. Like, that was never us, so we probably wouldn't know. Is like, have an honest conversation. It's like, okay, I see you're always weighing in 2 pounds under your goal weight. Where are you actually sitting at, you know?
Right.
Because if you're always 2 pounds under your goal weight, there's no way, you're probably 5 pounds off your goal weight, like walking around normally, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I always had a little bit of an issue with them determining exactly what your weight is.
Yeah.
Best when they're not the one inside your body feeling what's happening when you're trying to get to a certain weight.
This is exactly what I was going to get to. Yep.
And like, there were times where I saw, not me in particular, because my goal weight was actually a good goal weight. And like, if I was living life properly, hydrating properly, getting enough protein, like I was going to be around that goal weight. But there was guys who had to increase their goal weight so rapidly that they were living life in such an unhealthy manner that it caught up to them maybe even years down the road.
Yeah. So what sparked this question in my head was, as I get a little bit further away from the program, and I really in life, I'm starting to do this a whole lot more too, which I think everybody should question everything always, because you shouldn't always just take things for exactly what they are. I know that I respected Doyle and that staff and their ways with the utmost respect. You know, like, the rules were the rules. I was going to follow them. I was going to get it done. And at the time, I wasn't going to really ask questions, because it didn't fucking matter to me if I had ideas of, you know, I was 20 years old, right? What do I know about how a kid should, you know, they've done it for 20 years. But as I get a little bit further away, I start to look back on different things, and I think, is there actually a scenario where we were just doing everything the right and perfect way it should be done? Or where could places have improved a little bit? And the body weight thing comes to mind, especially with the whole conversation about Devontae Smith this last year. Dude weighs like 114 pounds and wins the Heisman. And they're pretty sure, all the experts say, he's probably going to do pretty good in the league as well. It makes me think, like, I think it should have been a more open conversation, like you said, Drake, is like, hey, we want you at 225. Okay, we'll take me specifically. We want you at 218, I think was my body weight by the end of my career. But I got to be honest, I felt a whole lot better. I felt leaner. I felt more athletic, a significant more, if I could do about 212. It was just, you know, you're that elite, and you kind of, not, I wasn't elite in any sense of the term, but when you're at that minutia of detail and you know, here's how I feel at this body weight, and if I go up a few more pounds, it changes this for me. Maybe a conversation of like, hey, where do you think you perform the best? Where do you feel the best? Because I do think that the data that you collect, what's it called? I don't know. The personal data that you collect.
Quantitative data?
No, it's like, God, I suck at this. It's just data that you have. I don't know. I can't think of the word. Anyway, your opinion and how you feel and the data that you collect inside of your own brain, and like, hey, I did really anecdotal. Yes. The anecdotal data that you have on yourself and what they have as an opinion of, hey, here's this guy, he should weigh this much. I think they should both matter.
This should matter. But at the same time, Clue, I remember when you're training for the NFL, like, you're drinking a gallon of milk every day, mm-hmm. trying to get up to, what was your 240?
240. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and there's a reason for that. You know, NFL teams want a long snapper that can be big enough to block and protect and stuff like that. So mm-hmm. that's why I think they, you know, have their set goals for you too. So,
right.
I mean, yeah, you can't just like, yeah, a guy might feel better playing cornerback at 168. He's not going to set the fucking eggs versus a fullback from Wisconsin at 168. Okay. We need you at 180.
I know.
And that's just the way it is.
And I understand that. I don't think that we should let I don't think that we should let Kevin Ward come into the program and decide his own body weight either. I'm not going all the way to that. But I do think that, and with my body weight for the NFL thing, I clearly, you know, I quite honestly, my performance was going to take a massive hit because of the extra 20, 25 pounds that I put on. I probably was not going to snap as well. And I most definitely wasn't going to cover on punts as well at 240. But the only reason I did that was because they wouldn't even consider looking at me if I didn't weigh that much. Mm-hmm. So that was a different situation. And the reason they do that is for good reason, right? When you're in there on a PAT or field goal, they've got 330-pound nose tackles whose only job is to run straight through your dumbass. And so you have to put something in the ground to get in front of them.
At a certain point, you know, in the game of football, mass moves mass. You know, I don't care how strong you are playing linebacker, you know, a dude who's 300 pounds and you got to take on a pulling guard, like, you got to have some weight behind you.
Yeah. You know? I just think, like, maybe, you know, maybe it's a 3-pound window either way. That would have been just a little bit more lenient or
I think they have increased the leniency.
Okay. Yeah.
Here's my two cents on this. Here's my two cents on this. And something I was thinking of while you guys were talking, you know, how advanced we got in measuring performance quotients by the end of our career, how advanced the staff had gotten through like the pressure plates and that new thing that Nick got to measure like latency period in your muscle reaction, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. In theory, could the strength staff and the coaches not get together and find the kind of like the peak performance that they want out of each position? And then you simply train your player to find his maximal like weight to translate to the closest he can possibly get to meeting those quotients that you're looking for. Cause we had all the analytical data that we could.
Are you saying like, take like your perfect example of a player at a position. So like for linebacker, take Josie Jewell and like, okay, we want to basically create more Josie Jewell. Is that what you're trying to say?
Or, well, I was thinking even more than Josie, like Josie had so much ability up here that he didn't even have to, he wasn't as elite physically as he was mentally. And like, there's linebackers who are way more physically elite than Josie, he was just unbelievably good. So like, what I'm saying,
I mean, he's pretty fucking strong too.
No doubt. But what I'm saying is, do you think Amani Jones and Aaron Mens were both more physically elite? Do you think they both had more physical capabilities?
Yes.
So like, Aaron Mens is one of the most physically freaky people I've ever seen. And like, to me, what he could do from a performance quotient standpoint is something that we all were striving for.
Yeah.
I mean, so
my, you know, but at the same point, like, you know, human beings are, you know, incredibly variable. Like,
I agree, but you're not letting me finish my point. You're not letting me finish my fucking point. If Aaron Mens is theoretically the ideal, or even if it's not him, you just have a theoretical ideal. And then you take a player and at 225 pounds, you've worked him up to 225 pounds and you see what he's capable of doing from a performance quotient standpoint. And then you force him to boost himself to 235 pounds and you see what he's capable of doing from a performance quotient standpoint. And you find in between, somewhere in between those numbers, or maybe it has to go higher, or maybe you find that it needs to go lower than 225. Like, you find somewhere in there where that particular player is performing as closely as he possibly can to your ideal performance quotients. And that's how you find the ideal body weight. And I don't personally think we did it like that. And I thought that we could.
And I'll tell you why. It's going to take you years to find that out. You only have 4 years to that.
I'm with both of you here. I know exactly where Kevin's going and I know exactly where you're coming from, Drake. I think that's the perfect way to do it. The issue is with 125 guys, the nuance of how dialed in that's going to end up being, I don't think they have enough time to put in specifically to each and every guy. It's right. You know,
yeah, you're saying going from 225 to building up to 235, that's going to take you at least a year. And then you're like, oh shit, like we went over it. Now we got to walk them back down to, you You know, that's like, okay, now 18 months later, now we're at the perfect, okay, oh, awesome, you graduated.
I do think though, Drake, that in a perfect world, that is the way I think you're 100% on. Like if you could find it, and I think there's some little bit of intangible data that you'd have to collect too, like Josie, like, okay. And I understand like you're always wanted your performance quotients to be as high as you possibly can, but there's also some form of like, okay, well, if it takes just insane levels of eating to get to this weight to meet that quotient, and now that amount of diet is fucking this guy's mental up and that brings him down mentally in the game. Like, it's just so nuanced to create.
That's just all stuff that you can try to quantify, but you really just can't.
I think with one guy, you could do it. Like, hey, let's just make this guy a science project.
Right, yeah, if you have a team around, like LeBron James probably has like a team around him. Who's like
exactly.
Realizing everything he fucking does, from his sleep to every calorie he takes in to every massage he gets, the amount of calories he burns in a fucking workout and yada, yada, yada. Yeah, can you do that with 125 guys? No, I don't think so.
That definitely could be a good point. I was just trying to think of ways to, because I mean, for some players, the anxiety of gaining or of weighing in and the shit that they were going to get into because of their weight was far excessive from the stress they even felt on game day. There was players who felt like they were in a cakewalk on game day as opposed to the battle that they were going to fight against the scale. And I just felt like, even though I wasn't part of that group, it was excessive. And I always thought that from the time I was right there until now.
And that's kind of where the base of my question was too, is like, even though I agreed with them monitoring body weights and it being a very crucial part of the game, the amount of anxiety that some, I'm not going to name names, but I watched some dudes throw up gallons of water because of what they put themselves through just to make weight on a Monday.
And like, you wouldn't have had guys hiding 2.5 pound plates in their compression shorts just to, if it wasn't a big deal. And that's why we had to start weighing in without our
shorts. I got caught a couple times. I didn't get caught, but you throw a couple Powerades in your hand and then you hold your lifting card in your hand with the Powerades on the other side, so the coach can't see it. 1.5 pounds, 2 pounds right there. And they just think you're holding your card. I did it multiple times to make sure I was there. Like, and that's, I didn't have anxiety about it, but I was having to create tactics to sneak around and make sure I made it, because the repercussions weren't something I wanted to face. It was just like, maybe we find a better way to do it here. I don't know.
And Drake, I just got one last thing on your point of like getting real dialed in on it. Like, there's a saying of strength conditioning. It's better to coach a good program great than to have a perfect program executed poorly. And
true.
It's, yeah, I think striving for perfection in a team sport as big as football is, you know, unrealistic, and it's probably not going to pan out as well as you hope.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that point. And when you guys were talking about how grand scale it would have to be in such a short amount of time,
that's the big kicker.
Four to five years is a big window if you think about it in small terms. But when you're trying to rebuild an entire human being, it's not that big of a window. Like, I do understand that. I was just thinking, like, from how malleable players are, and especially elite athletes are at that young age, as they're working into their prime, I was just like, in my mind, I was thinking, if you've got a guy that you're watching squat over 500 pounds, watching hang clean and hang snatch in the top percentile of not only his like classification, but of his body weight standard. And you're just watching the guy perform in front of your eyes and by the standards every way you want him to, what's the point of making him pack on just a few extra pounds? That's just kind of what I was feeling. But
DeMarco has, I've seen him post multiple stuff about this and other strength coaches that he knows about, like, hey, your guys are strong enough. They're strong enough. Like, the dude squats 600 pounds. We don't need him to be any stronger. Let's focus on some other areas. And it kind of, that's one minute example of like, how that would go into. I do think the protocol that you just came up with, Drake, that super just elite, let's create a robot protocol, it might work it might be best for like a private coach of individual athletes. Like if you're an elite wrestling coach and you have four athletes who are trying to make the Olympics, you could do it with those four athletes. Or you're an elite tennis coach and you have three guys who are trying to win Wimbledon, right? You could do it with three guys at an elite private level with all those resources, college setting, and especially those guys who are like, hey, you might have an 8 or 10 year career to try and be the best you could be from 18 to your 30 year old, right? College football is just not going to happen. But if it could happen, it would be extremely interesting to see.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and like you kind of said it yourself, Drake, like, you know, we worked to get this guy up to 225. Like your first 2-3 years in strength in the program is like, they're just building you up.
Right.
There's only a couple guys they put on the advanced card in his second or third years. You know, that's usually the juniors and seniors that are on that advanced card.
Explain that for the listeners, Kev.
So when you first show up, there's basically, there's three kind of four,
3.5. Yeah.
Groups of what they call of like what lifting program you're in within
it would be like a readiness classification.
Sure. There's your Devo 2s, who are the guys who literally just showed up on campus. They're learning how to,
they're goblet squatting with 35 pounds.
They're learning how to warm up, goblet squatting dumbbells, and they're learning how to wipe their ass and tuck in their shirt. There's the Devo 1s, who are usually the second year players who are have graduated for that.
They know how to wipe their ass.
No, they know how to wipe their ass. And they're doing, you know, heavy lifts, but like basic type of
movement patterns.
Movements and basic programming. So you're doing 5 sets of 3 at 85%, you know.
Some real linear strength, get real man muscles type shit.
Next week's heavier than this week. Yep. The week after that's heavier than that week.
It would be like what you find – what 98% of you guys listening, if you've gone through a strength program that you found, it would be Devo 2, the second out of four levels is what you would be doing. Mm-hmm.
And then,
and most of you should be on fucking Devo, the first one. Like, hey,
there was another one. It was before advanced. I forget the name of it. What we called it.
It was, I think it was just intermediate.
Was it just intermediate? Yeah. And that was like, your third year players, usually sometimes the younger guys who are more developed are in that card, or the older guys who are just not where they need to be are on that card too. And then you're starting to do some more advanced stuff. You're starting to do some contrast training. And then there's the advanced card where you're doing some of the stuff that DeMarco's out here doing.
Single leg,
French contrast training. You're doing,
very advanced plyometric stuff.
Mm-hmm. What are the lifts where like you unrack it, do a rep racket? I can't think of the name right now.
Oh, you weight 30 clusters.
Clusters?
Dude, listen to this.
When you're an advanced car, that's usually some third year players all the way up to your fifth year players. Usually the fourth and fifth year players are doing that card.
Yep.
And that's when they break out all the cool and fancy stuff in strength conditioning.
Yeah.
That is when it was French contrasts and clusters.
Yep.
That's when strength conditioning became not monotonous at all. It
was fun as fuck.
It was like, what in the hell could we possibly be doing today? And you were just doing movements that were making you feel like you were turned into a superhuman.
Mm-hmm. I literally thought I could fly on the banded
jump. French contrast is great.
And it was funny as hell to be, you're over there doing banded jumps and like 360 plyometrics over ladders, and the freshmen are over on the other side of the room doing like ab wheel
and tempo squats. We got to watch them go tick tock.
Yep.
Tick tock.
lying march. I mean, you're not even there until like fourth year. I mean, it takes a while to get there. It's just not enough time.
And that's when in theory you would start doing your dialing in, which,
truly
good call.
Some guys are leaving in 6 months after their junior season, you know?
Right. Yeah. Not us, but,
would have stayed.
Wow. This podcast got deep. I need to just do this more, bring topics like this and just fucking, here's one. It completely, This is stupid. This is why this podcast is so great. Now, if you're making a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, is it strawberry or grape strawberry. Jelly? And do both the peanut butter and jelly go on the same slice of bread and the other just covers it? Or do you put butter on one piece of bread and the jelly on the other piece?
It's peanut butter on one piece of bread.
Right.
Strawberry on the other piece of bread. Oh. And you put them together.
Hey, Kluve, I want you to let them know that I have the peanut butter and jelly hack and they don't. And you go ahead and let them know my peanut butter and jelly recipe and all you guys have been doing it wrong for your whole lives.
Okay, I'm going to come back to you, Kevin, because I have some shit
that is like the front that with the peanut butter and jelly mixed together in the same jar.
Oh,
that's weird. Don't do that.
Yeah, don't buy that shit. Do not buy that shit. Okay. I'm going to come back to you, Kevin. Drake, when I was out in Arizona, he was a gracious host. He was a fantastic host. And he, without even asking, we weren't even talking about it. It was middle of the afternoon. We were hanging out. We were actually out there working around with a dumbbell. We were dipping our foot in the pool. And all of a sudden, Drake walks out into the backyard with a Hawaiian sweet roll. Was it peanut butter and jelly?
It was a pan-fried.
Yep, pan-fried.
With butter, Hawaiian sweet roll with peanut butter and jelly on the inside. So the peanut butter and jelly like melted down into this crisped up fried Hawaiian sweet roll.
So pretty simple. You tear that sweet roll apart, you butter both halves, you get them a little toasted on the pan.
Butter that biscuit up.
Oh yeah, you butter it up real nice. Okay. And then you just slather it with peanut butter and jelly and you put it together. It's nice and warm. The peanut butter starts to melt just a little bit. And that I'm a grape jelly guy. I'm a grape jelly guy. Now I like strawberry jelly, but I prefer grape. And I think you're correct that you should put both on separate pieces of bread. However, when I make them, I just put both on the same piece of bread. So
Here's where I'm going to go, Kevin. You're correct on the separate pieces of bread because they spread evenly and you can tell if you have the correct ratio that you want.
Okay.
And you get it everywhere you want on the piece of bread.
Right. Everywhere. Sure. Secondly, I will take any jelly that you give me. I don't care if it's red, green, blue, purple, gold. You can give me peach jelly, apricot, blueberry, blackberry. I don't care. I'll eat it. I do think if you don't fry your bread, you're a little bit of a Neanderthal. This is 2021 and we have a lot of devices within our homes to heat our food.
Yeah.
And you're silly if you don't, because it is simply better.
Now, what is your drink with your peanut butter and jelly sandwich?
It's got to be a cold glass of milk.
I mean, milk is the best, but I am having quite a few issues with dairy at this point in my life. So I'm a water guy, ice water.
I will say, like, if you're creating the perfect meal. Now, in general, I don't have a lot of milk in my house, maybe some almond milk, which is all right. It's not like that old 2% or whole milk that I grew up on now. But yeah, it's peanut butter, jelly, and a glass of milk. And I do, for anybody listening, you could even do it with just a couple slices of white bread or wheat bread, man. Just throw those on butter those up and toast them a little bit on the pan and then put the Drake's onto something there. Yeah. What's the difference between jam and jelly?
Can't jelly this dick in your ass.
That was a boy's joke. That was one. Sorry for the 30 to 60 year old women out there listening for that one. That was an old, that's a college 22-year-old guy joke right there.
I'm sorry, Mom and Aunt Bonnie and Aunt Kathy. I know you guys are listening.
That's tough.
My apologies.
I like jelly a lot. I used to put it on those breakfast sandwiches that old Hy-Vee Mike would bring us. Oh, and then take it down to the special teams meeting so I can listen to get your fucking pads down. All right. We got punt today.
Hey, fix your demeanor.
Where's Ward at? Is he in here? Sitting right.
We didn't have to worry about that question. We knew Kevin was front and center. That's one thing you never had to worry about this group pre-podcast, post-podcast. It has become an issue, but pre-podcast, we never had to worry about this group showing up on time.
Yeah. I think I'm going to leave it there, man. I got a couple more topics, but who knows? I'm going to save him for a little. That was a solid hour right there. And I hope that
talking about real stuff too. Holy
real shit. Stuff, man. So I can't take credit for me just bringing up these random topics and questions. This is for the Walk On Army now. Now this is what I did last week. I said I'd go to Abu Dhabi to find Bob Sanders, and I actually had somebody in Abu Dhabi who lives there, Hawk fan, who listens to the podcast, reach out and say that they have not seen him there.
That is now my. Please tell me you're telling the truth.
I'm dead ass serious.
That is now my favorite Hawk story of all time from this podcast. That's the coolest thing that's ever happened.
So he said, I have not.
Send me the screenshots.
I will send you the screenshot. I will post for the Patreon members. I'll post the Twitter DM in there and leave out the name. I'm not kidding. Someone who lives in either Dubai or Abu Dhabi said, hey, I live out here. Haven't seen Bob Sanders. Would love to hear him on the pod. And that's my dedication level to this show that we do for you guys. And here is another example of my dedication level. I listen to other podcasts, not just for enjoyment, but also to take notes and figure out how I can be a better interviewer of both the guests that we have and my two co-hosts, because then it creates good content. And clearly today was an example of that. So you get a little bit of Lefty going for a PGA championship. You get a little bit of toasted peanut butter and jelly. Yep, there's Drake right there. Drake, you are Lefty, aren't you? I forgot about that.
That's why I cheer so hard for my guy, Phil, man. Well, back when Phil was on the major drought, and I was like, Dad, is he ever going to win a major? Like, are we ever going to get to watch Phil win a major? And then he did in the duh.
Dude, you just jumped up and I saw some abs there. What's going on? You ain't eating those peanut butter and jellies, are you? Holy shit.
Peanut butter and jelly for you.
Hey, listen. I did a really bad job of cutting weight. I got really sick because of it. And I don't even know what my body weight is right now. But I guarantee you, by my body weight alone, the Hawks would not feel comfortable walking me out at corner.
They wouldn't offer you a walk-on spot right now, for sure.
No. Not a walk-on spot. I'm saying they wouldn't. I couldn't come in and play linebacker. They wouldn't want me to play corner.
You skinny, huh?
You're not that low, dude.
How many? I'll bet you at.
You're not 200, but you're not 170.
I bet I was under 190 at my lowest, at my sickest.
Probably. Yeah.
Dude.
But you could play corner.
You own a scale?
No, I don't.
I would suggest buying a $10 scale.
Yeah, get a scale, man.
There's scales at all my gyms, but when I felt my worst, I didn't even stand on it.
I was 199 this morning. I'm the beef god.
No, that's Brian Ward. And please don't ever disrespect that man on my podcast ever again.
He's got that old man strength still. He's lost the
I believe that because he's got hands like frying pans that can fit four pieces of potato bread at the same time.
Talk about a guy who could make a little PB&J. That guy could eat a big one.
So, you know, I mentioned the goober. You're gonna lose a lot of respect for my father after I he was the man that wanted the goober. That's why we had it in the house, and I hated it so much.
Beef, listen, if you eat goober, I'm going to the store and getting goober, and that's that. This is now a goober podcast.
He's
and
wrong here. He's 100% wrong here. No goober.
I'll leave all the listeners with this. If you haven't, if you're still listening and you're interested, you have the time, go check out Kevin's Twitter. He posted a video of his girlfriend's dog playing in the water, and it is just, it'll make your heart warm.
What kind of dog is it, Kev?
Golden Retriever.
Oh man. Yeah. So the best.
It's a video that could go viral if the right things happen.
Go ahead and tag, rate my dogs, and I'm sure they'll love the content.
Yeah. So we hope you enjoyed this episode. We sure did. I had a blast recording this one. We'll be back with maybe a guest, maybe some more random topics. I kind of like this shit. Hope you guys have a fantastic week.
If you guys could smell how bad I smell after recording this podcast,
wow,
you might not listen to this podcast anymore. And that's how I'll leave you.
Okay. Well, Golden Retrievers and Drake's body odor. See you later. Thank you.
everyone. I'm MJ Acosta-Ruiz.
And I'm Lindsay Zarniak.
And together we'll be hosting the On Her Turf podcast. This summer, On Her Turf is hosting a daily Olympics podcast
that focuses exclusively on women's sports and the amazing women competing in Tokyo.
We'll bring you interviews with Olympians and in-depth analysis on your favorite teams.
Plus, we're going to talk about some of the challenges still facing women's sports today.
So join us daily at On Her Turf as we cover all the excitement of the Tokyo Olympics.
Be sure to check us out on Apple Podcasts and be sure to follow On Her Turf on Twitter and Instagram too.